Special relationships and transatlantic correspondence galore. It's time for another installment of New York Real Talk on Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
Segnale in fase.
To happen. Okay. New York Real Talk has expanded and effectively it's hybridized with the Midweek Drive live to form obviously a Italian themed program, which we are informing the world will simply be called Memento Vivere or Memento Vivere. Remember you're alive. We're delighted to welcome, of course, stalwart of New York Real Talk and indeed ace Italian journalist Joe Pilato. How are you, Joe?
Very well. Good evening, everyone. Lovely to see you all.
Excellent. Pamela Suman, as ever, who a co-creator of this program. Pamela, it's nice to see our baby beginning to emerge, taking its first Memento Vivere steps into the grand ecoverse of communications and so on. And who better to actually welcome for the first show of Memento Vivere? See, I've even got an Italian flag in the background, than Eugene Valente. Eugene, welcome to the program. How are you?
Well, thank you very much for the invitation, and I'm fine. I'm okay. Thank you.
Excellent.
Okay,
Well, I've just been listening to
what is
Seven
it?
Years. 7 Years, which is your latest album, is a new album, 7 Years in
Space.
Space. Exactly. And of course, Joe is quite literally using a backdrop of space. I haven't done hard about that, but I thought, no, let's sort of just work on that process. The first thing that sprang to my mind is you are, in so many ways, the contemporary incarnation of Jean-Michel Jarre, mixed with Vangelis, with a little bit of electropop,
Oh.
courtesy of possibly a Visage thrown in as well. Were those influences in terms of your interest in electropop?
Oh, well, first of all, I'm extremely open to every genre or every kind of music.
I wanted to also, it's a panel listening man interjecting myself here, that on this program, I wanted to invite also ever, if though it's probably not necessary, but because Joe speaks Italian as a mother tongue, and of course Eugene, being from Milan, are you from Milan?
Actually, I'm from Rome.
Oh, he's from Rome. Oh.
I moved to Milan a couple of years ago.
Oh, fantastic. Well, so what I'm saying is feel free at any point to speak in Italian to one another. We'll just have to catch up. It's not a problem. So we want this to sort of be somewhat of a bilingual program, although neither Alex nor I have a complete command over Italian, but we do, we are inclined to research and to learn. So no problem. Just
You
in
too.
case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's
So
okay. This is it will work fine. yeah, I think that probably in the grand scheme of things, it will make Alex's life a bit easier.
But we're not trying to make Alex's life easier.
Thank you, Pamela. Let's talk 7 Years in Space. Joe, you've been a fan of this album. Would you like to effectively sort of quiz Eugene on the concept behind it and, of course, the wonderment of it?
Well,
Yeah.
by listening to Eugene's album that we have reviewed on the website I'm leading, I noticed that being this a sort of concept album about a man that is kind of trying to is kind of a little bit lost in space, just trying to find himself. I'm wondering if the whole concept of the record is a way for Eugene to say that music has got so many possibilities that he's trying to look for new areas of music in that space that he so well defines in his album. Nice interpretation. Good interpretation. Well, I, and you know, it's of course it's right. And if I can add something, some of the tracks were planned to be released actually 7 years ago, and but. They had a different arrangements, different, quite different sound, because I had a band before. In over these 7 years, I changed my approach to music in general, and there have been some changes also in my life, my own life. And then so my music changed, and some of the tracks were selected from the album that had to be released 7 years ago, and were put together with some new tracks that I had written over the last 2 years, and then it was like, well, going out to space and rescue that old songs, to bring back to a new life here to Earth. So the new shape they reached now is, well, it's something more consistent than the previous one. And so it's like a space
voyage, but it's actually it's an inner travel. Is something more introspective. Space and astronomy are all metaphors that are used to express something that is truly personal. I don't want to make a documentary. It's not my field in this case. And I use symbols. I use everything I feel suitable for expressing something that is actually personal.
We've heard two tracks of the album so far on the program, the very short intro, All You Need to Know, followed by the slightly more upbeat Dive. Again, fascinated by the kind of way that sort of launches with All You Need to Know, and it's obviously it's in Italian and it sets the scene. Was that something you were specifically looking for?
Yeah, this is the All You Need to Know track, which lasts a few seconds, features an audio test for speakers of television sets. And so it's my way to say, all you need to know to get into this album is just to make sure the audio is on and your speakers are hooked properly. And then it's all up to you, to your imagination, to your to power to travel in the sound that you hear, and that's it.
We're just about to hear Crash. Would you like to give us the background to Crash? Because obviously we don't want to go into space and then crash dive back onto Earth again. So, what was the rationale behind Crash?
Oh, well, of course, there is a metaphor here because I borrowed some images from the police, the crime movies, spy movies of the 70s and 80s. To describe the end of a human relationship. And then it's like a chase on the on the streets of the M87 galaxy, which is our galaxy, and crash means that in the beginning this song was called The Perfect Crash, and the perfect crash is a crash is called perfect when everything is destroyed and everyone dies, or right the opposite, everything there is no damage at all and all the people come alive out of it. So the two persons are like going towards a sort of collision that, of course, they no one knows where they heading to exactly, if to destruction or to a resurrection, you know.
Sometimes hoping that it turns into truth. Blind. my dreams, something brighter than what you want to see. In a flash, we'll revive. No time for you to apologize, and no time to wave goodbye. Just two souls, collision course, heading for a perfect crash. Hold on to what you got, babe. Hold on to love and save it for your black day. When you've been on your own, together or divided, we will explode. We'll make the sun go blind. Our future's out of control. So many tears to cry, babe, until it's done to stand here tall and proud until the end of the show.
It's the uncertainty that makes life worthwhile, Eugene. That's what we can say.
Maybe can I say something about the dive track? Because all you need to know was just the intro, but dive was the real track, opening track. is about the research for beauty. The image is of a sort of a portrait of Dorian Gray, but it's transposed into the future. When I sing "Beauty Never Lies," is a reference to Oscar Wilde, to "Beauty is Truth," and the meaning is of course put together with modern symbols like the neon lights, for example, and so is an attack towards against the bad taste, which is very common now. Is maybe because the social media simply put it all before our eyes. I think that there is always been here, but now we are surrounded because we see it, and so we have to sort of escape. We have to escape. So this cosmic dive is maybe an exaggeration to try to seek for beauty, to be brave enough.
Works perfectly. We've been listening to some of the music of Eugene. You're listening to Memento Vivere, a new program from the makers of Madrid Drive and indeed New York Real Talk. Words about the wonderful world, 7 years in space, a precious synth pop gin, a precious synth pop gem, and an excellent debut album. The words indeed, the latter Joe Pilato. In fact, Joe, I'm so impressed with respect to that. I'm going to also change my background. So we have matching backgrounds then. We're both basically
in
space. Exactly.
You're in space too.
We can do space in all sorts of ways. So there
I'm doing space in here. I'm in outer space in here. So the external surroundings have nothing to do with
me too.
Joe, going back to your thoughts on this album, I mean, I agree with you in terms of having listened to 7 Years in Space. I think it is an outstanding debut. Were you a fan, Joe, of electro pop and synth pop? I mean, it goes back to Kraftwerk, of course, the German group who
them.
Obviously pioneered so much.
I
mentioned Jean-Michel Jarre. What are your thoughts on this one, Joe?
Yeah, I really love the early Jean-Michel Jarre. Oxygen and Equinox are my favorite album. Magnetic Fields are really my favorite. I love all the German scene of the early 70s, all the krautrock bands like Neue Kahn, and of course Kraftwerk, which are on their family tree.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Ralf Heuter,
really
of course.
Yeah.
Joe, back to yourself. Because you didn't strike me initially as being an electro-pop fan. What are your thoughts now you had time to reflect?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think that I follow music with the idea or with the concept of a pigeonhole certain kind of music. Since I was a teenager, I've been fed with all different type of music. And I guess that when you grow up as an individual, your vision about music changes. So perhaps some of the music that as a teenager I thought was slightly futile, purely because of its sound. You know, with time, then I discovered that actually there was a lot more about it.
You sound, Joe, if I might say, rather like most of us went through the generation thinking ABBA, it's not cool to like ABBA, and then suddenly you realize actually ABBA are quite clever.
They are certainly clever. I wouldn't say that is my cup of tea, truth to be told. But there is no doubt that they have been able to craft a genre that has met like of, you know, I would say several generations. So credit to them for being able to, you know, create almost an icon about themselves. I think that even young kids these days, probably they're brought up by their parents with the idea of listening to songs like Mamma Mia or Dancing Queen or things like that. So, but back to your question, especially about Eugene. I have discovered Eugene through his work with other Italian artists that he has worked with in previous projects. And I was just curious to find out a bit more about this album because I heard a couple of the tracks that were released prior to 7 Years in Space. And I was really very impressed by the cohesive work and the conceptual work that went through. It's to me, I'm not saying that because Eugene is here, of course, but I would say it's truly a brilliant debut for him.
Eugene, you were born in 1975. You were self-taught. This is the thing that impressed me. You actually taught yourself how to play piano at the age of 4. Now, I started piano lessons at 4, and I was playing the piano at that stage, but to be self-taught, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
was it just
yeah.
a case of you saw a keyboard and felt drawn to it?
Well, it started as a game. It started all as a game. It's a pity that in Italian, the word... play is translated in two different ways because giocare, it means play a game, and play an instrument is suonare. And here is in Italy, here in Italy it sounds different, but I think that in my early years, I applied the play concept. So it was music, but it was an exploration. It was a game. So I often went to my uncle's house in Gaeta. It's a small town. In the center of Italy, and they had a piano, and every afternoon in summer my parents brought me there, and so soon I went into the room with the piano and started creating some combinations of notes, something that sound me good anyway. Then the day after, I returned in that room, and one of my first memories were, well, I tried to remember what I produced or played or elaborated the day before, and then go on Well, now I don't know. I don't know if through the years, subconsciously, I used something of those ideas. But
I was just wondering.
Did
you use things like cassette tape in terms of recording your compositions? Was the cassette at all of any input?
I began when I was 10 or 11. I began using tape to record some rudimental melodies, and you know, and so the first synthesizer came when I was 14 years old. Even though when I was 4 or 5, my father bought me a very small keyboard, a Casio. It was a calculator, but also a small keyboard, monophonic with the rhythms. And so it was very simple to use. And I just enjoyed it. Never thought about making it my day job, what then became over the years.
I'm intrigued to see Pamela's nodding at this. Pamela, you're too young to remember the Casio keyboard. It's don't pretend you do. It's just a different line.
No, it's very interesting to me because my first band, I actually used a Casio CZ-101 as one of my keyboards. Oh. And and on my last album, Break, I used to, I call it Baby Yarmulke, which is just, it's nonsensical. It's just a Jewish thing. It's funny. It's a Yamaha and it's a toy. Again, it's a toy. And so I was thinking of all of these things as you were all talking. And one of those was, we were touching on the subject, Eugene, of curiosity. And it's so interesting to me. I think that if you had come up, perhaps, with a teacher who was always rapping your knuckles and saying, you have to bend your fingers when you play piano and you must practice your scales, and, you know, all of these things.
You know my old piano teacher, Pamela. That's exactly what she used to do.
We all had one of those. I had one quit because I wrote songs at 5 instead of practicing my scales, and she left. She said, I give up. But that was the best thing that happened to me because, you know, as I say with Eugene, because for you, exploration was the most important thing. It was a game. It was playing. And I see, you know, I see these kids in New York City who are just, you know, in a room for four hours when they're 5 years old with their violin and they're practicing. It's that side of your brain that gets switched off where you have to learn something else and you're not employing the right brain. You're not employing the ancient creativity, the sense of wonder and creativity and curiosity and finding things, the mystery of what is this, how can I make it do things, and what is it, this is great, if I do this it does this, I make this, and then all of a sudden I create a little world with it and I'm playing with this new world I've created. I think I am so happy that that's the way you came into music, because it had no psychological baggage about anyone forcing you to practice and become a prodigy at five. You know, instead you just started full of wonder and you keep that wonder. And it's probably what drives your passion and probably why you will never stop doing it.
Yeah. Yes, I always wanted to keep it, emotional for me. And the only way to protect this this way of playing was just, studying by myself. So when I was 20, I bought a book, a method for piano, just to improve some technique on the performance, or just when I to be more sure about myself when I go on stage with other musicians, with the bands. So just for my preparation, you know. And
It's particularly interesting taking the point that Pamela said, that Paul McCartney, when asked would he ever actually learn to play music, to read music, he said no, because it would destroy his creativity. And I think obviously there's an interesting line there where, as Paul McCartney would say, you can certainly cross over.
If Paul McCartney says, I agree with him.
You know, it's true. I've seen people who can only play music when there's sheet music in front of them on the piano. And I've seen other people who took music lessons and studied and are wildly creative and disciplined. And I think Eugene, you did the right thing, because I think it's wonderful. When something's a mystery, it can be more fun. But at the same time, when you start to learn the technical history, when you start to learn the mechanics, the architecture of something that you love so much, you can go even scientifically even deeper into it, and you can get yourself to where you can actually play things. You're not going to hurt yourself, and it will allow you on keyboards too to have more facility, more dexterity, and do it without hurting yourself. But I think that both things in the right way can just bring you further. So practice, technique, the classical training, all of this, I think, is important. You know, at the same time, it's nothing as far as being a creator. You can be like a monkey and play other people's music. You can even interpret other people's music uniquely, which is beautiful. But in order to create, you have to have this side really open, like an antenna, just tuned, so that when things come through, you're ready, you're perceptive, you can get them, whether it's from out there or in here or wherever it comes from. You know, it's very, so you've done the right thing.
you have to be an antenna. Yeah, like an antenna. I've balanced my, instinctuality on music. When I attended university and I used to study electronic engineering, and then I decided to be a musician for life. But but anyway, those elements remained and helped me in organizing practical things that are to follow. When you write songs, when you record a song, and taking care about technical aspects. That's the way I mix my own song, and I take care of the recordings, and pay attention of everything to sound properly, or at least the way I want. And but creation is totally different. It is more instinctual. And in a song, in one of the song called Undisclosed, there's on the album, I try to speak about it, to talk about the creation, where the ideas come from. And the song is the lyrics are a transcription of a dream that I had, And the second part is my own reflections. And I quote the name of Giorgio De Chirico painting called Le Muse Inquietanti. That's to say, the disquieting muses. And I say, disquieting muses, they will never call. All I know is that they keep staring at me. And it's like, well, they are a source of inspiration. They, inspiration may, can't be controlled and maybe doesn't exist. There are ideas in the air and you catch, maybe it's a, well, it's not predictable thing. So the answer is that there is no answer.
I'm ready for the next move. Don't care how the outcome. I'm looking for a safe place between the shots of a Polaroid. All I got is a secret code. Well hidden in my sleep talk. When I lie here in my bed, I don't listen to the other me. Speak to me. Speak to me. Speak to me.
So many loving hearts, so little room in me. I like to hug you all. I like to disappear. How would you define it? How would you define it? How would you define it? How?
I am the hardest word that's left in your mouth. I'm the last lash of doubt.
Indeed, how would you define it? Which is what we've just been listening to. So there we are. The answer possibly is you can't. You can't define it. So don't ask the question. How would you define it? Answer, you can't. Got to ask the question, though. Milan, Rome, Rome, Milan, where does the heart lie? Which one would you say is the is preferred?
Oh, well, I love both cities for different reasons. I lived in Rome for more than 10 years and I got a lot of friends there and I made some really important experiences okay. there. So
you're not going to come out in favor of one or the other. You're going to stay neutral there.
Oh no, I'm not escaping from Rome. Okay. I saw not like an escape from Rome, but I moved here for my job, and for my wife's job, and we both did over these 2 years a good upgrade. It was caused by some requests that we had before when we were in Rome to move here, because it's related to opportunities of job.
Well, certainly there seems to be something in the name Eugene, because you're the second Eugene that we've interviewed in the last few weeks, the other one being Eugene Berman, who is a Russian documentarian. Yeah. Who also has just released an opera, which was quite fascinating. And obviously there's Eugene Roddenberry. Now, of course, your good self, Eugene. So it's wondrous. EugeneOfficial.com, is that the best place to find out more magical information about your work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. And I just squeeze this one in before Pamela has another quick question for you, because we are beginning to reach the end of the whole thing. Visage's founder, Rusty Egan, you've been on his radio shows. I'm a big fan of Visage. Do you like Fade to Grey, or are there any other Visage numbers which you think, yes, that's particularly impressive?
Well, I really love that album. And the opening track, Visage, and the Visage track, and Mind Over Toy Tour. And
absolute classic.
Oh, it's full of great.
When a child outgrows a toy, hateful child, hurtful boy, it's wondrous. We'll play it now.
Nothing lasts. A puppet's motions controlled by strings.
Pamela, would you like to actually find out in the remaining moments that we've got here on this debut episode, this launch episode of Memento Vivere, what ionosphere is all about, other as opposed to a layer in the atmosphere?
You just asked the question. I'm just going to pass it over to Eugene.
I've lost for a while.
Ionosphere. Tell us about it. We're going to wrap it up in a few moments.
Ionosphere. Yeah. Okay. Well, ionosphere is is a layer of our atmosphere. For its chemical qualities, properties, it's very helpful for radio communications at night, because it's related to its ions. Mm-hmm. And some years ago, I released a song called Radio Wave, and it's connected ideally to this ambient track, because it's an ambient track. It is not a song. It's an haiku. It's got a haiku, a Japanese poem. I tried to follow all the rules of writing of the haiku, and I just say Indian summer sky. Du bist mein süßes Heimat, which is German. It means you are my sweet home. Electricity. And it's a way to, it's something spiritual. It's just like a spiritual connection with another person, which is, I don't speak about heaven or parallel dimensions. I use this element, which is very close to our planet, to try to symbolize connection with people.
And that makes it a perfect track for us to wrap up the first, and hopefully a series of many Memento Vivres that we've developed. Gio Pilato, huge thanks to your good self. Gio, Pamela and I have been trying to work out a suitable slightly kind of catchphrase. We certainly don't want to use home of the favorite pickle, because that's another line entirely. Have you got any? I mean, I was thinking ciao bella. I mean, what would you say, Gio, we should actually wrap up with for Memento Vivere?
What you mean in terms of finding a kind of a slogan to
yes, I think every, so. Yes.
I think it's, don't feel pressure.
But you got 90 seconds, Joe. So that's all I'm saying. 87, 86.
Well, I mean, do you want me to say in Italian or in English?
Oh, both. In Italian.
Well, I mean, if this is going to an Italian audience, then all I would say is thank you for listening, which is grazie per l'ascolto.
Do this by choosing.